Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Because of you, I know that my race does not define who I am or what I can accomplish.
On the Jimmy Fallon show last week, I don't know if you saw this, it's on YouTube, but there was a demonstration in Michelle Obama's signature Oh Shucks Best Girlfriend way that showed the raw power of this first lady who compares to no other.
Thank you for making me a more confident woman.
Speaking deep from the heart, that is the one value I try to teach my kids.
People start giving testimonies to a first lady photo, then from behind a curtain in the flesh, Michelle Obama steps forward, causing the fans to collapse in gobs of tears and shrieks.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you so much.
Approval rating doesn't really describe the emotional connection many Americans have developed with Michelle Obama. It's a connection with people around the world that will certainly survive the Obama presidency. An artifact of that emotional geology can be found in a book from author Veronica Chambers, original essays from people like filmmaker Ava DuVernay, chef Marcus Samuelson, essayist for WNYC Rebecca Carroll, The Meaning of Michelle, 16 writers on the iconic First Lady and how her journey inspires our own.
That thing that Michelle Obama has been able to do, where she has been able to be strong and respectable and smart and impressive, and yet still do mom dancing with Jimmy Fallon and carpool karaoke. I mean, especially as a black woman, as a woman of color, I don't think we've seen that kind of range. You know, it puts a lot of old stereotypes on their head, and it just represents a wide scope of how to be and a wide scope of possibility.
How much envy is there in this book of just really aspiring to either have what she has or think the way she thinks or really to go on the same journey that she's gone on?
You know, it's funny because I think that she doesn't invoke envy in the way that someone else might, partly because she wears it all so easily. And I also think one of the things that the book and the people in the book do is that they really, you know, demarcate in their writing that it's been a journey. She's been on an evolution, and you can see it in her style. You can see it in the causes she's chosen, from the garden to Let's Move to Let Girls Learn. Tiffany Dufu, who has a book coming out called Drop the Ball, she had an interview with Michelle Obama, and she asked her about advice for her daughter, and she says, I just encourage her to breathe, to lower the perfection bar. Just live your life and figure out what's in your heart. What you need will change every year, and you've got to be okay with that. And that alone, that's not just advice for Malia. That's advice for women everywhere. And so that's been one of the gifts, is that we got to see her do it. We got to see her figure it out piece by piece. And she did it with so much grace. It gave us a confidence that we could do some of that in our own lives, too.
And Tiffany Dufu's essay is entitled On Being Flawlessly Imperfect.
Yes.
It sort of says it all right there. Why do you think it was her who referenced that she lives in a home that was built by slave labor, and she has that garden that it seems to be so filled with meaning on so many levels other than just, you know, great food at the table?
You know, I think that that's where you go to the authenticity. A lot of other women in a similar circumstance walking into the White House with this culture and heritage wouldn't want to point to slavery. You know, slave culture has been sort of submerged because somehow it comes across as shameful. And yet, you know, I remember being one of a handful of black students on a really predominantly white campus and feeling really isolated. And there were days when I wanted to drop out, when things were said to me, when too many people were touching my hair, and when I felt like my teachers weren't getting me. And I remember sitting in a library and thinking, if Henry Box Brown could mail himself to freedom, I can get through college. And so, you know, slavery is not a shameful legacy. The legacy of the shame in slavery is really in the slaveholder. And yet it's a very difficult legacy. It has been and continues to be a difficult legacy for us to claim with any pride because obviously of all the, you know, murkiness and violence and the way that it's a foundation of our country.
8 years seems like an eye blink now that it's almost over. But do you think she was happy during much of that time or any of that time?
I think so. I think that when you look at things like the White House Poetry Jam or Hamilton, you know, when we first got our glimpse of Hamilton, the way that she opened that home up, and, you know, Jason Moran and Alicia Hall Moran talk about this in their essay, and they say, you know, for all the eyes that were on her, the amazing, beautiful, powerful thing she did was that she reversed the gaze. She didn't say, it's all about me and my home and my dress and my children, my husband and the state dinner. She just threw the doors open and she put the emphasis, the gaze on children, on artists, on writers, on what she did for visual artists in that home, what she did for the elderly, for the sick. I mean, I remember her dancing with that woman who was like 102 years old. I'll never forget that. You know, she was constantly reversing the gaze, and I think she took great pleasure in that, among many other things.
So you're young, but what if 20, 25 years from now you run into Michelle Obama? What would you want to tell her about what it was that was iconic about her that you've sort of kept close to your own heart in your own life?
You know, it's funny because people keep going, well, you've met her. I haven't met her.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I didn't have to meet her to just know that someone who looks like me, who had a similar skin tone, who had, you know, the similar cultural features and heritage, held this role with so much grace and so much style, and she lived the questions out loud. And, you know, Brené Brown has a phrase where she says, you know, if I get to be like me, I belong. If I have to be like you, I fit in. And I feel like the greatest lesson for me and my daughter is that I learned the difference between belonging and fitting in, and I don't think I can ever go back to the idea that I have to be more like what is considered mainstream to be acceptable. And that's a huge gift.
And Michelle teaches that lesson to you and to other young women?
I think absolutely. I mean, I you know, when you are a first and only, it's really hard to figure out how much of yourself you get to be in the room. And I think that seeing what Michelle Obama did with this role, it gave me a sense of how to belong by being yourself. That is both a gift for myself and for my daughter. You know, my daughter, who has big, frizzy afro, she said to me the other day, I was combing her hair and putting it, and she goes, you know, just so you know, I have no problem having kinky hair, and I'll just wear it out in an afro. You don't have to pull it back into a nice bun. And I thought, okay, you know, that's a little thing, but it only comes when you see your own beauty modeled around you in ways big and small.
Talking with Veronica Chambers, who's a writer and author of The Meaning of Michelle, 16 writers writing about the iconic First Lady and how her journey inspires our own. She's a JSK fellow at Stanford University, where I'm speaking to her from. Veronica, thanks so much.
Thank you.